Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Resounding Echoes. Despite wishful thinking to the contrary, I doubt if there has been a year in the last 2,000 or 3,000 of human history where some sort of savagery has not been inflicted by some group of humans on another group, or on another species of life with which we, as latecomers to the wonder of occasionally faulty replicating DNA, share this planet. That said, the year 1914 dishonorably stands out in this sorry saga. War erupted in the summer and exponentially escalated, resulting in the senseless slaughter of thousands rising to millions of predominantly young men, many of them conscripts, savagely sacrificed for the sake of their benighted betters and the continued safeguarding of their betters' ill-gotten gains and lifestyles. Justifications were sold to those sent to be slaughtered under the warped wrapping of patriotism, honour, valour, Christian duty, glory, justice, and a long list of other fallacies which are wheeled out when it suits those in power and safely stowed away under lock and key in the watchful eye of their trigger-happy police and armed forces when they don't. The British Empire ostensibly justified its entry into the First World War and the mobilisation of its armed forces to defend the sovereign state of Belgium from aggressive and unjust invasion. The same empire, and this could be said for any of the imperial players in the First World War, did not see any injustice or even the slightest hypocrisy in the way they used the same armed forces to brutally repress and deny sovereign rights to any of the countries which they themselves had forcibly invaded and occupied. Poor little Jamaica, or Nyasaland, or Guyana, or Mauritius, or Fiji, or Ireland, or, it's a long list, was one thing. Poor little Belgium, however, was clearly a totally different matter. Invasion, murder, rape, occupation, slavery, theft, systematic annihilation of indigenous cultures, wholesale destruction of natural habitats and ecosystems for rapacious economic exploitation, or even just for entertainment. Gentlemen must have their sport after all. A catalogue of countless crimes could all be seen as just when they were good for business, even more so when they were carried out with God on your side. Justice for the colonies, as for the slaves in preceding centuries, was distinctly bad for business and just not cricket. Many struggled, unsurprisingly, to compose music in this environment, even more so as the war dragged on, but compose music they did. That was Danse Sauvage by Leo Ornstein, written maybe in 1914. Dating anything by Ornstein, including the man himself, especially in his early life, is not a simple task. When is a problem, but where is more straightforward. He was born on the banks of the Dnieper in the heart of the Ukraine. And for our next piece, we are going somewhere closer to the heart of Europe. Thank you. That was part of the central adagio from the duo for cello and violin composed by Hungarian Zoltán Kodály. From the heart of Europe, we move on to all too close to the Western Front and the denouement of the Belle Époque. That was a fragment from the last of 13 songs that make up the cycle Clairière dans le ciel, composed by Marie-Juliette Olga Boulanger, on poems from a collection called Tristesse by Francis Jam. I could be kind and say that the original poems are mediocre, but I won't be kind. I will be honest and say that they are awful. They read far too much like pubescent, perfumed pleading. But Jam was no teenager when these were published. And look what Rimbaud was writing when he was a teenager. Fortunately, Boulanger's settings elevate these words to a far higher level. For those wishing to find out more about Boulanger, she is usually known as Lily, not Marie or Juliette or Olga. I am not comfortable with the use of this name, as it makes her sound like a pet cat and not a composer, but also because I think there is not a little patronizing sexism behind the use of this name. I am not denying, I would be stupid to do so, that she was known as Lily by her loved ones, but that is not the same as referring to her as such in music or history books or CD liner notes. Nobody refers to Wagner as Dicky Baby, or Mozart as Wulfi, or Schoenberg as Arnie. They may well have been known as such by their respective loved ones at home, but their pet names stayed right there, at home, because they were men, real composers, and it just wouldn't be acceptable or respectable to refer to them as such in the public sphere. But Boulanger was a woman, and a young woman at that, so it is perfectly okay to refer to her as if she were a pet or a child, and not by any of the names on her birth certificate. Those were the final floating bars of the fourth of five pieces by Sergei Prokofiev known as Sarcasms. Sarcasm may well have seemed out of place and distinctly distasteful in 1914, but many behind the lines in a pre-breaking news world were literally immune and ignorant to what was actually happening on the Eastern and Western fronts, not to mention all the colonial outposts and the high and low seas. Indeed, for many, life carried on as before, and the world of yesterday continued to be the world from which most music of 1914 was born. But that still allowed ample scope for originality. Thank you. That was the opening of the first salvo in what would in time become one of the most fascinating symphony cycles of the 20th century. It was composed by young Dutch composer Matthijs Vermeulen, and to be fair to him, a lot of it was composed before World War I cast its shroud over his and his generation's world. It has been enormously frustrating trying to choose fragments to represent this constantly developing one-movement 25-minute piece, like trying to choose one sentence to represent a conversation. But c'est la vie, so for what it's worth, let's listen to a little more. The composer of our penultimate piece for today said that its final bars were some of my best music of that time. In that sentence, I would change my for the and that for any to give a more accurate evaluation of this piece. That was from the third of Igor Stravinsky's extraordinary three pieces for string quartet. The title is important. This is not a string quartet in the classical sense. This is music that was conceived, like a lot of Stravinsky's music, at the piano. He subsequently chose to use the string quartet medium for the unique expressive possibilities offered by two violins, a viola, and a cello, and not as another addition to a long-established genre. The established idea of the string quartet was far from moribund, but it is arguably the idea evidenced in this piece that would bear so much delicious fruit throughout the 20th century. Stravinsky lived a long and very fruitful life. Sadly, however, in 1914, one of his elder compatriots had unknowingly already embarked upon his final voyage around our nearest star. As the fireball that he was, it is only appropriate that he and we today go out in a blaze of glory. Not wishing to risk any spontaneous combustion here in the studio, I think we should draw an end to today's program while it's still safe to do so. So I will thank you very much for listening. And once again, I hope you enjoyed what you heard. And if you did, please tune in again next time. Until then, take care. Da 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 da